Well, that's the struggle we're right in the middle of. The efforts to restore passivity have been a mixed success, not completely by any means. We're right in the middle of it now, and the lines that are drawn are the usual ones, quite currently, in fact. Take, say, the NAFTA debate. It's very revealing in this respect. The NAFTA debate, the big issue toward the end of the NAFTA, NAFTA was a major issue for the corporate world, such a major issue that the media, which usually kind of pretend to be above the struggle, abandoned the pretense, and their class commitments became very explicit. In fact, the New York Times actually used the phrase class lines at one point. That's like a no-no. You're not allowed to refer to that. But it was just too obvious to conceal, as were the commitments of the media. There was a real frenzy about NAFTA, unusual, in fact. And that tells you that something really important was at stake, as it was. A lot of what was important was the attack on democracy, in fact, which is accelerated by these so-called trade agreements. You recall right at the end, you know, when it looked like not such a clear thing, the frenzy mounted to a fever pitch, and it focused on one thing primarily, the fact that labor, working people, were attempting to lobby their representatives. And that was considered an absolute scandal. Clinton made all kinds of speeches, which were headlined all over the place, in which he denounced what he called the naked pressure and the raw muscle of labor, even descended to pleading based on friendship and threatening based on money and work and campaigns. Total outrage, you know, to approach your representatives and say, look, we'd like you to do something. This went all the way over to what's considered the left in the media. So, say, take Anthony Lewis, who's about as far out as you can imagine, still be in respectable society. He denounced what he called the backward, unenlightened labor movement with its crude, threatening tactics and its fear of change and so on. The whole thing was real hysteria. And it was quite interesting. New York Times, the last day, had an editorial, which had in it a box in which they listed people in the New York area who were planning to vote against NAFTA, and they listed their contributions from labor. They said this is kind of ominous, you know, raises serious questions about whether they're being honest and so on and so forth. Well, Washington Post did the same thing. That was interesting. Now, as everybody knew but didn't say until afterwards when they sort of came clean on it, in fact, they came clean the day after the vote, corporate lobbying was hugely greater than labor lobbying, I mean, by an overwhelming factor, as always. And nobody worried about that. You know, they weren't having crude, threatening tactics and all this bad stuff. And there's a good reason for that. Corporate lobbying is not a problem. They are the men of best quality. You know, they are the ones who are supposed to rule. And the responsible intellectuals are their good and loyal servants. So therefore, there's nothing to say about corporate lobbying. We don't object to it. It's when the rascal multitude tries to get in the act that everyone begins to foam at the mouth. They're supposed to submit in silence to the rule of the aristocracy of wealth, and of course the aristocracy of intellect and character, you know, us smart guys who do their work for them. Actually, very little has changed since the 17th century. If you look at the hysteria in the 17th century, among 17th century intellectuals, which I just gave a couple of quotes from, a lot more elsewhere if you like, it reads very similarly to the hysteria today. Say if working people dare, you know, to lobby their representatives. And the reason it's the same is the issues are the same. You can call it a new world order if you like, but it's the same class war, you know, and intellectuals are playing the same service role, the ones who are within the shadow cast by big business, that is, and therefore granted respectability. Departures from this do exist, but they're very slight. All of this helps to explain the enthusiasm for NAFTA and GATT, which do primary thing about them is that they vest far more power in private absolutist institutions, which are completely unaccountable to the public and operate in secret, spawning the de facto world government that the business press openly talks about. And all of that moves us toward, going back to that spectrum on democracy, this moves us toward the reactionary end, the Reaganite end, in which the population are not even spectators, insofar as power is shifted to the transnational arena with its own de facto world government, you're not even a spectator, because only the most, you know, real experts and specialists have any idea, say, what's going on in the IMF or something like that. Well, that's a great achievement in the destruction of democracy, and that helps explain the tremendous enthusiasm for NAFTA, GATT, and other such profoundly anti-democratic developments, also anti-market developments, but as I say, that's another story.